Hello and welcome to The Blockchain and Us, where pioneers and thought leaders talk about their journey in blockchain technology, crypto assets, and the token economy. And I'm your host, Manuel Staggers.
Well, blockchains really are ways to enable people to collaborate on like a totally different scale. So today, what are some forms of collaboration? You can have, a company. Of course, that's quite limited. You know, it's not that anyone can join and contribute. When I think of goals like space exploration or all of those kind of things, then, you know, how are you going to accomplish those goals? I think it's going to be through creating structures, probably based on blockchains or something very, very similar that enable millions of people to, you know, do something together and accomplish just amazing things.
Irrespective of where they are in the world and who they are.
Exactly, yeah. They could be anybody, they could be anywhere. And that's what I'm most excited about.
This episode has support from 8Grade, story-driven media. 8Grade is a media production company with a focus on telling engaging stories about new technologies and the future with films, interviews, podcasts, and other media that make an impact. To learn more about story-driven media, visit 8gr8.com. My guest today is Brian Fabian Crane. Brian is a Berlin-based economist and entrepreneur, and he is the founder and co-host of the blockchain podcast Epicenter and the co-founder and CEO of Chorus One, which is a leading validator on Cosmos and Loom. Brian has degrees in economics, philosophy, and cognitive science from the University of Chicago, London School of Economics, and University College London, and he has been involved in blockchain projects since 2013, including Monax, Tendermint, and Cosmos. And now to the conversation with Brian Fabian Crane. Hi, Brian, and many thanks for taking time today.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's a real pleasure for once to be, you know, a guest on a podcast.
You've been doing many different things in the blockchain and crypto space in the past, and I'd like to focus on two of them mainly today. One is Epicenter, your podcast, and the other one is Chorus One, which builds a validator on the Cosmos network. So when you started with the podcast, what was your vision initially? What did you want to achieve?
So I learned about Bitcoin in the summer of 2013, and I was immediately, you know, obsessed and felt, okay, this is what I wanted to spend my time on. But I didn't, at the time, you know, there weren't a lot of jobs in the space, and I didn't feel particularly qualified for, maybe the very few that there were. And so I wanted to somehow, you know, become involved. And then one thing I did was I started a meetup group. And then the second thing I did was to start the podcast, because I felt there was just a great need for somebody to, you know, educate, great need for education. And I felt it was a great opportunity for me also to learn about lots of different projects, to meet people, and to kind of, you know, build a network and just become involved. Mm-hmm.
So it was partly also a research project for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just learning about the blockchain space has been a huge part of doing Epicenter.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. And, you know, for those who don't know the podcast yet, I mean, I think it's very impressive what you built there. I think you have something like 200,000 plays a month and over 30,000 subscribers. And these are fantastic numbers in the podcast space.
Yeah. I mean, we started at the time, there was one other podcast in about Bitcoin and Let's Talk Bitcoin. And then when we started, there was a few others started, but, you know, all of them stopped at some point. So I think we're, you know, about the oldest podcast at this point that has a little bit of a wider horizon and doesn't just look at Bitcoin. So just being around and doing it every week for such a long time definitely helps a lot. And then we've had lots of great guests on as well. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, obviously, the format has changed, the reach has changed, you know, over time. But how has your vision and mission changed with the podcast over these 5 years?
I wouldn't say it has changed at all. Mm-hmm. You know, for us, it was just about really having conversations about what we saw as the most interesting and important topics in the blockchain space, so you kind of understand where things are going. You know, in the beginning, it was called Epicenter Bitcoin, but even even in the very beginning, I mean, we did the first episodes on Ethereum in like maybe February 2014. We had barely started. So we never had a particularly myopic view on a particular blockchain or technology, but always very interested in exploring new things. And that's kind of the same way today.
Okay. I've been doing my podcast now for a year, roughly. And I mean, obviously, I learned a lot, you know, how to do it, how to make it better, how to make things work with the interviews, how to ask better questions. For you, what do you think are the main learnings, you know, that you learned, what a good podcast needs about, you know, a complex topic like technology?
Well, you know, a good podcast really needs to have somebody who's able to communicate the ideas well, and they also have to be interesting ideas. So, I mean, we definitely favor, you know, kind of big ideas that are interesting and have this big disruptive potential and that they can change the course of this industry. So I think that's a good criteria to use. It's just, it's this thing so big that if it works out, it could really change the trajectory of the industry. So that's a good thing. And otherwise we do try to prepare pretty thoroughly. And, you know, spend a few hours reading through white papers, blog posts, maybe listening to previous interviews. And I think that helps a lot in having an idea beforehand where we would like to take a conversation and then being able to ask the, you know, the appropriate questions.
Okay. And I mean, in general, I think podcast is a very interesting phenomenon, how it evolved, you know, in recent years. I mean, from being very niche to today, where many of the bigger brands and even, you know, entertainment media, TV stations have podcasts or are considering podcasts. But it's still the individual podcast, I think, that get the most attention, you know, and fan base.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an amazing medium in a way that, you know, you can just go there and, you know, you can speak, record this. And it's such an easy way to do it in a way. And then you can reach, you know, tens of thousands of people who listen to this, you know, every week. It's very powerful.
Okay. Is it for you guys, is it profitable to do the podcast?
I mean, we never really, I mean, we do have some sponsors now, right? So we have like Microsoft, who's a sponsor and, you know, pays a decent amount. Then we have some other sponsors. Cosmos is a sponsor now. So it's certainly enough to, I mean, we have a team of maybe five people who do a bunch of different stuff. You know, they're not full time, but working on it. So we can certainly pay those all fine. But overall, we've made it's not really the sort of thing that it would make a lot of sense to do as a business. That being said, I think you could turn it into a proper business if one really put in the effort and treated it more as a for-profit venture. I think you could actually make, at this point, a substantial amount of money. But it's just not our primary focus.
Yeah, of course. Otherwise, you're like a salesperson for ads. Right.
I mean, I don't mind ads. I think the things we advertise for, we feel good about advertising for. So I don't have an issue with ads in that context. You know, of course, if you have this kind of intrusive ads that have surveillance in it and all, it's a bit something different. But it's just very time consuming to find sponsors and work with them. Yeah.
Okay. Let's speak a little bit about one of your other projects, Chorus One. And maybe we can start with what Chorus One is and how you got there.
Yeah. So actually, let me maybe take a step back here and talk about. So in 2015, I joined a company called Ares Industries. It later renamed to Monax. Mm-hmm. And so Ares Industries, it was founded by a bunch of lawyers who were very interested in blockchain and smart contracts. And they felt like, okay, this Ethereum thing is interesting, but the problem is if as a business you want to use Ethereum, there's so much legal uncertainty and it kind of doesn't really fit into the existing legal paradigm. So they had this idea, okay, let's create smart contracts, but in a legally compliant way. And that was kind of the beginning of, you know, permissioned blockchains, or at least on this permission smart contracts. And so what they did is they forked Ethereum. And that was before Ethereum had launched. So that was back in 2014. And they started working on kind of an enterprise Ethereum version. And in the process, they also wanted to replace proof of work. Of course, the question was, okay, what do you replace proof of work with? And then what they found was this white paper and this like super small software project called Tendermint. And that was just one person, Jay Kwon, back then. He was based in San Francisco and he had written this white paper. And basically, Tendermint was taking an old classical consensus algorithm, of, you know, which there are many, and there's a whole academic literature on it. And it was implementing it in this kind of blockchain world. And so that was the idea of Tendermint. And then the Aris Industries team thought, like, oh, this is great. We can use this and we can get rid of the proof of work. And then this is much better suited to have, you know, kind of a consortium blockchain. Mm-hmm. And so they started becoming the first user of Tendermint. And then I joined the Aris Industries team, or it later, renamed to Monax, so the Monax team. And I started doing kind of worked in business development. So I spent around a year and a half speaking with lots of banks and consultants about blockchain. And we were building on Tendermint.
And that was when, in 2015
and mm-hmm. 16.
Okay.
And the first engineer at Monax was this guy, Ethan Buckman. And he was basically paid by the Monax team to help Jay fix Tendermint. And then the Tendermint guys at the time, they had the idea to create a public network, but this was kind of before there was only the Ethereum token sale that had happened. And it wasn't really clear that this was a viable way of fundraising or that this could be repeated. And so they also looked at enterprise applications, but then at one point they started working on this idea called Cosmos. And Ethan ended up leaving Monax and he joined Jay full-time and he became the CTO of the Cosmos project. And then in the end, I also left Monax and I also joined the Cosmos team and became the COO of Cosmos back in January 2017, mm-hmm. Of the Tendermint team. And so then we were working on that, right? And we had a fundraiser, right? So there's a foundation in Switzerland, just like many others did. We did this token sale in April 2017, which was also an intense time. It was just sort of on the cusp of the ICO bubble. It was, you know, even 3 weeks before we started the token, the fundraiser, we were unsure whether how well it would go and if there would be demand. And then it started feeling more and more like there's momentum. And then in the end, we raised around 17 million in like 25 minutes, mm-hmm. which was a record back then. Nobody had like done that. And then within a week, it was surpassed and surpassed and surpassed. So that was just before the entire madness kind of started.
Mm-hmm. Maybe not everybody knows what Cosmos is exactly. So can you maybe just explain some of the main characteristics and things that Cosmos wants to solve?
Yeah. So Cosmos is a pretty complex project and there's a bunch of different things going on. So first of all, there's Tendermint. Now Tendermint is developed by the same team as Cosmos. And Tendermint is, you know, today it's the most advanced implementation of proof of stake. So that means you have these entities called validators. And the validators, they vote on every single block that gets produced. So let's say a particular block gets proposed. So there's some proposer. Then all of the validators vote on, is this block valid? And if 2/3 of the voting power say yes, then the block is kind of finalized. So there's a lot of benefits to this, right? So you can produce blocks pretty quickly. So in Cosmos, it's roughly like every 3 seconds or 4 seconds. Like all of the blocks are final. So you don't have forks and stuff like that. And then you can also just have big throughput in terms of transactions. So, you know, you would be able to have throughput of maybe 10,000 transactions per second or something like that. And so that's been in development for a long time. And that's one of the key projects that that Cosmos is based on. Now, another project that's important to think about is the idea, or is this project called Cosmos SDK. And the Cosmos SDK, what it does is it separates the consensus layer from the application layer. So the idea is basically that the consensus layer worries about ordering all of the transactions. So it just provides the application, hey, here's a list of transactions. They've been validated. This is the order. And then the application layer can sort of do with it whatever it wants. You know, so an EVM would be kind of one way of dealing with this transactions and creating a state out of it. But there could be very different models as well. So the high level vision and idea of Cosmos is that it makes sense to have lots of different blockchains. And it makes sense to have lots of different blockchains for a bunch of reasons. So first of all, if you have this kind of model where you have the consensus layer and afterwards you can build your application on top or your blockchain on top, it makes sense to adjust the blockchain to, you know, whatever you're doing. So maybe it's a social media application and it wants to have maximum throughput. And maybe there's another thing that wants to have, you know, anybody can write contracts and something else that has a very limited set of transactions that accepts. So you can do lots of different optimization if you can kind of design your blockchain around your application. So that's one thing. Another thing is around sovereignty. And I think this has been a big issue in Ethereum, that you have, you know, the application that runs on Ethereum, that has one community of users, and the underlying blockchain has a different community of users. And that can lead to conflicts. And, you know, some examples are, of course, the DAO hard fork, where you had the problem is the underlying network had to do a hard fork to deal with this. And then you have two different constituencies with different interests. So the nice thing about having, you know, a particular blockchain where the community that runs the application is also the community that controls the blockchain is that, you know, they have much more autonomy and sovereignty. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's scalability as well, right? If you have a different blockchain for a particular application, you can just achieve much, much higher scale. Right. In Ethereum, the issue was really that all of these people were using, you know, on the same resource. And, you know, when the ICOs were really going through the roof, it meant these other applications, they couldn't even get into a block. So that's kind of on a high level, the Cosmos vision is that we're going to have a lot of these different blockchains. They're all independent. They're all sovereign, controlled by their own community. But if you have that, there is, of course, the question, how can they interoperate? How can they communicate with each other? Mm-hmm. In Ethereum, you just have smart contracts and they can talk with each other. And that's the great benefit of Ethereum. So if they're on their own blockchain, how does that work? And that's where also Cosmos really comes in. And in Cosmos is, on the one hand, it's this framework for building blockchains. But on the other hand, it's also a communication protocol between blockchains so that the blockchain can kind of assign a message and transmit it to another blockchain. And the idea then is if you have all of these different blockchains and they want to communicate with each other, it makes a lot of sense to have like a central hub that routes all of these communications between the different blockchains. And that's the Cosmos hub. The hub on its own is, you know, not that useful yet. This communication protocol between the different blockchains is going to launch in a few months, maybe 3-4 months. And then there are already many, many people that are building, you know, their independent blockchains on, you know, on either Tendermint or the Cosmos SDK. And some of them include, you know, Binance is building its DEX. So they're building a decentralized exchange and they're doing that on the Cosmos SDK. There's a variety of, you know, Ethereum projects that are looking at it. We're also working on a project called Loom, which is doing a kind of gaming and they're building on Tendermint. So there's a lot of projects. And once the Cosmos Hub is live and this communication protocol is live, they'll all be able to, you know, connect with the Cosmos Hub. And then the idea is we're really creating this kind of internet of blockchains, where you have lots of different chains that can all interoperate and scale and communicate with each other. While at the same time, you know, it's a highly decentralized system, right? Each blockchain is completely autonomous, can control its own destiny, has its own staking token, can have its own economics. It's responsible for its own security.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe that's the big question, right, of this year and the next year. How can we build an internet of blockchains?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the Cosmos is the most coherent vision for what that could look like. But, you know, we'll see if it plays out like that. But I think over the next year, we'll start seeing data on this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, interesting. But then at some point, I think you left Cosmos and you started Chorus One.
Yeah, exactly. So at the end of 2017, I was working on Cosmos. And then the idea in Tendermint or in Cosmos is that you'll have this live network and then you have these validators. And the validators have this really key role in that the validators have to put up a security bond. Mm-hmm. So they put up staking tokens. And then other token holders, and so the validators then run a full node and they're connected with the other validators and they get the blocks and they verify them and they say, okay, this is a valid block. They also have to, you know, coordinate software upgrades and they're basically responsible for the security of the network. So this is very analogous to a miner in Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, you know, this was in the white paper and not just in the Cosmos white paper, but many modern blockchains and new blockchains, they're based on some idea of proof of stake and they have this notion of validator. And I just didn't see anybody working on this. And I felt like, hey, this is a gap. Like somebody needs to go and really work on this and build this infrastructure, understand how this works from a business model perspective. And if these networks are to be really decentralized, it's important that these validators, you know, they're not just dumb machines, but they really think through all of the software upgrades. They have opinions. They help steer the development of the course of the networks. So that's why I started speaking with my co-host at Epicenter, Meher, about this. And in the end, we decided to start a company, Chorus One, and we started working on this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also interested in other networks. So we are doing a lot of research and speaking with different teams. And we do plan to run such services on more networks. But, maybe we can speak a little bit about the approach we're taking here with Chorus One. And because I think that really ties into this question.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
What we see as a key role for a validator, and especially a role that we want to, you really focus on, is it centers around governance. And normally when a blockchain launches, the blockchain is created by a particular team. And of course, it's a small team in the beginning and they have, you know, lots of control. They can decide what features to build. They can decide on the economics and the token distribution and the different roles in the network. And, you know, often the team might go and set up a foundation, do a token sale. So you're starting off with this, center of power. But if a network is to really succeed, I mean, in my view, that needs to change and the power needs to become much more distributed. And you need to start having, you know, a variety of parties that work on the code and on improving it and that also share together the decision making about where blockchain should go, what kind of trade-offs make. So if you think of that, you know, if you agree with that, then the question is, how does that actually happen in reality? And I think the role of a validator is really, really key here. In Cosmos, the way governance works is as follows. Let's say you're an atom holder. That means that you have these atoms and you can stake them. So you have the ability to earn some rewards. You can earn some block rewards and you can earn some transaction fees from the network. But what you can also do is you can vote on any protocol change that comes up. And if you don't vote, then your vote gets inherited by the validator. So you work the same, let's say you delegate with us, you vote the same way as course one. But if you don't want to, you know, if you don't agree with us, you can also cast your own vote in a different way and basically sort of override whatever we'd be voting. And so we see our role in this is very crucial. And the thing we're focusing on is, you know, education. Mm-hmm. So we're doing a lot of content about these networks to help people understand the different decisions that can be made. And then we're also building tools around governance to help people, know when a vote is coming up, how to participate, what the different choices and trade-offs are. And so that's what we are focusing on a lot with Course One.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. And I mean, that alone, I think, would be a good topic to spend many hours discussing, because it's a huge topic, I think, you know, the whole generalized mining, staking services debate. I think it's a super interesting field.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's taken all, I mean, that's the amazing thing. You know, when we started, working on this in some way in November 2017. And at the time there was like one company that had, and maybe there's two companies. There was a company called Vest and one called Rocketpool that was doing something in this form. Mm-hmm. And then recently we had on Cosmos, there was this thing called Game of Stakes, where you had all of these validator companies all over the world participate in this test net and kind of compete with each other. And, you know, in the end, there was like prices given out in the actual token in the mainnet. And there was, you know, I think 130 or something around that, different teams that were working on this, you know, from all over the world. And it was just such an incredible community effort. So the way this has developed in the last year and a half is just astonishing.
Let's take a quick break for a message from our sponsors. 8Grade is a media production company with a special focus on telling engaging stories about new technologies and the future. Companies work with 8Grade to turn relatively dry content, such as scientific articles, business white papers, or corporate narratives, into engaging stories with films, interviews, podcasts, and other media that reach people on social channels and offline. To contact 8Grade and learn more about making an impact with story-driven media, visit 8gr8.com.
The way this has developed in the last year and a half is just astonishing.
Yeah, brave new world. Definitely a brave new world out there. And speaking of that, on the Chorus One website, you write a lot about changing the status quo in the world with crypto economics and decentralized networks. So in your view, how exactly can these technologies change the world?
Yeah. And I think that totally ties into what we're doing at Course One. And the way I think about blockchains is that what blockchains really are ways to enable people to collaborate on like a totally different scale. Right, so today, what are some forms of collaboration? You can have, a company. Now it has shareholders and it has employees, and then it can kind of act in some sort of unison to accomplish a particular goal. Of course, that's quite limited. You know, it's not that anyone can join and contribute. It's not global often. It's restricted by all kinds of rules and regulations and laws. Mm-hmm. And so also in terms of scale, it's quite limited. You know, I mean, okay, companies do get pretty large, but, it takes them a long time to grow that big and they're not so agile. So when I think of blockchains, what really excites me is the ability to enable, you know, hundreds, thousands, future tens of thousands or millions of people to, you know, do something together and almost and accomplish just amazing things. And I think that's, you know, often it's mentioned that, you know, Bitcoin is kind of the first DAO. And I think that's very true. So what is Bitcoin, right? So it put out a white paper and some code, and the code already had this block reward. So every block, you know, some Bitcoin would be paid to the miners, right? So Bitcoin already had this mechanism in which it would pay for its own network and security. And then all of these people would buy Bitcoin and they would be, their incentives would be aligned in making this thing succeed. And then we had this amazing community emerge from this. But the mechanism in Bitcoin is kind of primitive, right? It's just these bulk rewards and, you know, some other economic parameters. But I think, and then the, also the big issue was the decision making. There was no good process for the decision making. So when you had this controversy about how to scale Bitcoin and what to do with the block size, well, it was very difficult. It was difficult to know what people would even want, right? Like, I mean, I still don't know what a majority of Bitcoin users would have wanted or not. And there was, you know, of course, both sides claimed that Bitcoin users want what they want, but there's no way of measuring it. And even if there was a way of measuring it, there was no way of translating that insight into actual change on the network. And so I think we are starting to be able to do this. And then we'll start to be able to just act in, as this massive, massive communities and accomplish amazing things. And when I think of goals like you may be solving a global warming or space exploration or all of those kind of things, then you know how are you going to accomplish those goals? I mean, I think it's going to be through creating structures, you know, probably based on blockchains or something very, very similar that allow, you know, vast numbers of people to coordinate and collaborate, that incentivize people appropriately. And that's what I'm most excited about.
Cool. And also incentivize people and connect them irrespective of where they are in the world and who they are.
Exactly. Yeah. They could be anybody. They could be anywhere. You know, I think this aspect of having permissionless, you know, permissionlessness that anybody can come in and take action and kind of the blockchain doesn't care. I think that's super powerful.
If you look at what you learned, you know, in your research and your work with Cosmos and Chorus One and these other blockchain projects, what approaches do you think make sense to blockchain technology in the long run?
Yeah. Well, with Cosmos, a few things stand out to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, one thing is that there's a vision that's been worked on for a very long time. So there's just this kind of persistence and long work on it. And, you know, sometimes they're not easy. And I think, you know, the Tendermint team greatly struggled with finding money in like 2015 and 16 and surviving. But just kind of persisting through all of that and having this long time horizon, I think is a very valuable thing. Another thing is just creating, actually doing everything in open source. So that's surprisingly rare, right? If you look at the, you know, like well-known blockchain projects, then many have significant, you know, they haven't launched yet, but might be like very highly expected, you know, something like Definity, you know, Filecoin. Then they would develop much of their code in closed source and then sort of at some later point when they feel ready, they would open source it. Mm-hmm. So Cosmos has always been open source. And I think that's a very powerful thing because then in the meantime, as people are building, you know, as Cosmos being developed, other people also start building on it and there's already a community there. And then I think decentralization is just a key thing. And you know, I think it's a question of values, it's a question of economics. So for example, maybe we certainly could have like raised more money back then in 2017 or more tokens could have been kept by the team or the foundation. But, you know, instead the, you know, foundation has 10% and the team has 10% too. So that's similar to Ethereum. I think that's actually the upper bound of a project like that, that, mm-hmm. that should be with those entities. Cause otherwise, if you have like this huge token treasuries, you just have this entity that's basically that's going to be super powerful on these networks, and it will stay like that for, you know, potentially decades. So that's also another thing. And then what's turned out quite fortunate too is that, you know, when we did the fundraiser back then, the token sale, didn't do any marketing, and so not that many people knew about the project. But the people who knew about it were really the people who were kind of at the cutting edge and had a deeper understanding of the space and the technology. So as a result, I think the people who participate in that fundraiser are just incredibly, it's an incredibly strong community, mm-hmm. and incredibly like sophisticated and smart community. And I think that's also, it just turned out very fortunately. Whereas, you know, I think some other fund token sales, they targeted more of a mainstream audience to try to get onto Forbes and whatnot. And, you know, they succeeded often, I think, in getting random people to put money in. But then I think that's actually end up being a detriment to these projects.
Yeah. I mean, there's many of these big lumbering, huge hedge fund like foundations, right? And many of them, you know, with permissioned approaches or even federated approaches. So what's your view on, you know, on permissioned or even federated blockchains?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think in principle, it's a sound idea. So it made sense to me. And, you know, when I joined in 2015 and started working on Monax, I thought it was compelling. I still think it's compelling on some level, but the big issue is that if you have kind of a consortium blockchain, then you need to have these different, you know, companies that they kind of need to agree upfront about what are the rules of this blockchain. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that if you go with banks or insurance companies or like just traditional companies, then they are kind of bureaucratic and slow organizations, each on their own. And then if they all try to do something together, it's just a total nightmare. And there takes forever. And so I think, you know, people have been working on these kind of permission blockchain stuff for 5 years now. And, you know, not that much has come out of it. And I think it's largely just a question of politics. And the big benefit in a public blockchain is, oh, just somebody goes and launches the blockchain. And then, you know, if you want to use it, you can use it. If you don't want to use it, you don't use it. But you don't have this, you know, step first where everyone has to come to agreement about what the blockchain looks like, how it works, what role, who has what power. I think that's a massive, massive benefit in terms of, you know, speed of innovation. So today I'm much more bullish on public blockchains. And I think a lot of the controls that people want to have in private blockchains, you can probably add them to public blockchains too, as a sort of, you know, layer on top. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of my current thinking on this.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Interesting. Where do you see blockchains and cryptocurrencies in the wider context, you know, of other technologies in this whole digital transformation wave, like AI, data science, automation?
I see blockchain almost as a counter trend to those things. I think if you look at AI and automation and big data, then they've really tended to lead to a tremendous concentration of power and wealth in a few entities like Google and Facebook and Amazon. And there's something deeply, if you look at AI, it's almost natural that it goes in this direction. Now, I think blockchain is really going in the exact opposite direction, where you're trying to decentralize power, you're trying to have more power with the individual, more sovereignty. Mm-hmm. And I think that's super exciting. I hope it will succeed. But I think it's also important to kind of note that, you know, you have these other strong technologies, and I think naturally they are driving the opposite direction, right? And they're kind of undermining the work of blockchain. And I don't know, you know, what will end up prevailing here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, just a little side note. I mean, you mentioned decentralization and more of a flatter view, you know, maybe that blockchains enable, as opposed to AI or, you know, those centralizing technologies. But then, you know, if we look at the reality that, you know, many of these blockchain networks also are very centralized and have also huge concentrations of wealth. So I think the idea is compelling, and in theory, I'm totally with you. But I think the reality in some events in the blockchain space looks quite the same, right? Like a very centralized AI sort of power structure.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I think when it comes to concentration of wealth, it's certainly the case that, you know, blockchain hasn't necessarily reduced that in any way. I think it could. One of the things that I've been excited about for a long time is the idea of having a sort of, you know, basic income coin. Mm-hmm. And the way I would see that working would be that everyone can kind of register on this network, and then they would just receive, let's say, 2,000 coins per month. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you learn about it later, you sign up a year from now, then you can also sign up and you also get your 2,000 coins per month. Now, of course, the issue is, how do you know a person is a person, and, you know, Sybil attacks and fake identities. And so that's the challenge for how to deal with that. But if you created something like that, then I think maybe that would be something where you could have, it would actually lead to an increased distribution of wealth. But I think it's too early to tell, you know, what blockchain is going to do in this form. Mm-hmm. But you'll be able to do, if you look at something like Ethereum or, you know, let's say something like Cosmos, I mean, the really powerful thing is that you can do hard forks, right? You can basically, it's open source code, the distribution is open source. So you can take a network and you can say, okay, we're going to change something fundamentally and we're going to relaunch it. And of course, you could say, okay, and you know, this happened a few times that people have said, okay, I think it happened with Zcash, for example. So Zcash was launched and then you have, I think, around 20%, maybe it's been reduced, or maybe it was less than 20, 10%. There's some percentage of, you know, every block reward would go to the foundation. And then this foundation would do development. And then some people were like, no, that's, you know, that's not right. It's this kind of pre-mine for the foundation. And so I think it'd be totally feasible to say, oh, we take these big blockchain networks, but we get rid of the existing token, we create a new token, and maybe we have a totally different distribution of that.
Yeah, cool. Speaking of experiments, what are you currently learning, you know, both in your work or in your life at the moment?
So definitely on the course one side, a huge learning for us has been just how to get how to be productive as an organization. Mm-hmm. One tool that has been very powerful in that is OKRs. So, you know, basically we have a retreat every 3 months where we get the entire team together. We work for 1 week in one place, and then we have it's like quarterly objectives, and then can kind of see how we're doing on that. And we didn't do this at the beginning when we started course one, and then we started doing it in the fall, and then, you know, the last quarter last year, we just did pretty terrible on this. So we're like, oh, it's not good. And I think if we had done it earlier, it would have been the same, right? We would have been done pretty terrible. But it was, you know, we could also analyze why. And okay, one thing was we were trying to do too many things. We had to be more focused. Mm-hmm. And so this OKR basically is kind of regular check-in of, okay, what did I predict we were going to do and what did we actually do, and having this contrast is super powerful, and kind of instituting that as an organizational culture has been great.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. How about personally, you know, in your personal life, what are you improving there?
Yeah. So in your personal life, one of the things that I spend a decent amount of time on is meditation. Although interesting, because I spoke, you know, yesterday, I think, with my meditation teacher, and then this kind of question, and, you know, this, I think, is one of the fundamental tensions about, you know, meditation, is that, you know, wanting to accomplish something is at the same time undermining actually accomplishing it, right? And sort of practicing for its own sake. So that's something I'm grappling a lot with. But it's also been extremely interesting to, I mean, I've been meditating for many years, but then in the last kind of year, 2 years, I've really deepened it a lot. And that's been super rewarding.
Mm-hmm. What's on the horizon for you, you know, with your projects, Epicenter Chorus One, in the coming years?
So So with Epicenter, you know, for the most part, we keep doing what we're doing. We have been thinking about doing a sort of a membership thing mm-hmm. where it would be a small monthly or some monthly fee, and we would try to do some, you know, extra kind of a build more of a community. So that's something we have been exploring. So that may come. On Chorus, of course, there is launching. I mean, Cosmos is a very big thing, and so I think I could see Cosmos being, you know, we had like Bitcoin, we had Ethereum. I could see Cosmos being kind of next paradigm on a similar scale, but you know, who knows? It's too early to tell. But I see that. Mm-hmm. And so I think we would like to spend or play a key role in that, in helping many of these new blockchains launch and bootstrap and get connected and get started. And then on the Chorus One side, the other thing we really care about is actually building a community of Chorus One users. So a community that's aligned in that they deeply care about the networks, that they have these tokens of, that they, you know, want to stake them and of course earn rewards, but they also want to be involved in the decision making and the governance. And so building this community is going to be a big focus for us.
Cool. Brian, this was really great. Really enjoyed it. And many thanks for taking time.
No, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much. Your questions were great.
Thanks so much for joining us today. More info on our guests and our sponsors is in the show notes of this episode and on the podcast website, theblockchainandus.com. To help people find this podcast, it's important that you download, subscribe, and give it a top rating and review on iTunes or on the podcast platform of your choice. I'm Manuel Staggers, and I thank you very much for listening.